I eventually got married with a Syrian in the process. So this was also a good thing for me. And in 2011, I was expelled from Syria because I wrote some things in Dutch media about the revolution. So I have, I can somehow feel with the Syrian writers who we will meet tonight what it is to be forced to leave your country. But of course, when I got home, I returned to my home country. I had my parents, I had my friends, I had a house to go to. For these writers, obviously, it was a totally different experience because they cannot return to their homeland, at least not in the foreseeable future, and maybe never. But I can give away that one of them actually has returned to Syria, Samer Yazbek. So we will talk about that later. But before we will meet them, I will tell you something about the situation of freedom of expression in Syria. At least I was asked to do so, and I can be quite short, because it was non-existent. And my wife told me last week that she studied journalism for a year in Syria, and she told me that she applied for a local newspaper. And the editor-in-chief, she said, "Oh, you can write about anything you like, anything, doesn't matter, except if it's not about politics, religion, and all a bunch of other social taboos that she couldn't write about." And this is basically the system where Syrian writers and people in general had to deal with. Like, you could criticize society or the system, like education, bureaucracy, corruption, but you couldn't directly blame the government, or at least not the regime, for it. And especially not the president and his entourage. I can remember one day I walked in the alleyways of the old city with a friend of mine. And we talked about Rami Makhlouf, cousin of the president. And when I mentioned his name, he immediately said, "Shh, don't talk about Rami Makhlouf. There are spies everywhere." So it was important not to mention these red lines. And religion was another hot iron, especially as far as it concerned the religion of the regime. And the regime was considered to be an Alawi regime. The president, Bashar al-Assad, is an Alawi, and there always had been tensions between the Alawi community and the Sunni community in Syria. And actually saying, like, "Oh, the government is Alawi and the president is Alawi," it was not to be said. This has led to violent tensions and even some kind of war in the early 80s with the bombardment of Hama, where maybe 20 to 30,000 people have lost their lives. So this is a no-go. Also, religion in general. I mean, you're not expected to joke about things that are considered sacred in society. Not only because of fear of structures of power, but maybe just your neighbor or a friend could get upset about it. Even if you're in a bar drinking with your friend and he's totally drunk, you make a joke about a prophet, he might slap you in the face. Anyway, my wife, she was applying for this job, and she heard all these things she couldn't write about. And then the editor-in-chief said, "You know what you could do? You could go and interview people from X Factor or of The Voice, Arabs. Interview the participants and the jury and bring a nice article about that." She got upset and she thought, maybe journalism isn't really my thing. And she changed and she started studying German literature. Of course, a lot of people, they did write. And they had to pay a price for it. Some writers who were critical about the regime, they ended up in prison. Other people were forced to flee, or they just disappeared. And we have Faraj Paragdar tonight with us. He can tell something about his time in prison. Of course, the Syrians and writers or whatever, they didn't need an editor-in-chief to tell them what to write or what not to write or what to say or what not to say. Syrians in general had a sort of self-censorship that they were so afraid of saying something that should not be said that they wouldn't say anything at all. Even things that were perfectly allowed to say, they wouldn't say. Syria was known as a republic of fear, or people were bound by shackles of fear. But when the revolution started, these shackles, they suddenly broke away. It was quite amazing to see that suddenly my friends and my neighbors and they started to give their opinion about the government in a way that they had never given before. And in that early stages, I thought, this is a win, this is a big gain. And maybe it is worth to pay a price for this. Of course, I didn't realize how big this price was going to be. And if we look back in hindsight to the situation in Syria today, I think freedom of expression is something that will not be realized anytime soon. Not in the areas that, not only in the areas that are controlled by the government or the regime, but also in the areas that are considered liberated. Because the rebels, Islamist or not, are not really tolerant towards criticism themselves, just in the manner as the regime they fight. So I think now it's a good time to go and talk to our writers and poets, because this evening is about them. And I first want to ask Samer Yazbek to come forward. Yeah, she deserves an applause. Huh? Samer Yazbek.
Good evening.
Welcome, Samer. You're a longtime critic of the Syrian regime, and you have witnessed the start of the revolution. You wrote a book about it, Woman in a Crossfire,
yeah.
Which tells about your experience during these first 4 months of the revolution. Then you were forced to leave, and you went to Paris. And now you're working on a new book, because you didn't stay in Paris, you went back to Syria a couple of times. Very exciting, and you will read now some of it to the audience. So
okay.
I will give you the microphone.
Yeah, and thank you. البوابة الأولى. آب 2012. تخدش ظهري الأسلاك الشائكة. قشعريرة تستقر في منتصف رأسي. كانت تحت الأسلاك الممتدة على طول خط الحدود. حفر تكفي لتسريب شخص واحد. استطعت اجتياز حفرة ثم ركضت سريعا. نصف ساعة من الركض مسافة كافية لعبور الحدود بين بلدين. لم يكن بصحبتي آنذاك غرباء كثر، ولم أعرف أنني سأكون قادرة على متابعة هذه التفاصيل، إذ كنت أظن لسبب غامض أنني سأضيع في زحمة الموت هناك، حيث قررت العودة إلى الوطن. في تلك اللحظة وقدمي تنغرس في الحفرة وظهري يحتك بالأسلاك الشائكة في المسافة الفاصلة بين خطي حدود. أرفع رأسي وأنظر للمرة الأولى إلى السماء البعيدة التي كانت تميل إلى السواد بعد انتظار حلول الليل لساعات طويلة كي نستطيع العبور دون أن ينتبه إلينا الجنود الأتراك. هناك في تلك اللحظة تنفست بعمق ورفعت ظهري وركضت حسب التعليمات. أخذت أركض كي أجتاز منطقة الخطر. الأرض صخرية وصعبة، ولكني ركضت بخفة رافعة من قلبي تحملني وترميني في الهواء. لقد عدت، ها أنا ذا من جديد، كنت أتمتم وألهث. لقد عدت، ولم يكن هذا مشهدا سينمائيا، كان حدثا حقيقيا. أركض أو تمتم، لقد عدت، لقد عدت. سمعنا أزيز رصاص متقطعا وهدير آلية عسكرية تنتقل في الطرف الآخر، لكننا استطعنا النفاذ والركض. كل شيء يبدو كما لو أنه مقدر منذ زمن بعيد. وضعت على رأسي غطاء وارتديت سترة طويلة وبنطالا عريضا، حيث كان علينا بعد ذلك اجتياز هضبة عالية صعودا قبل أن ننحدر ركضا وبسرعة لنجد سيارة في انتظارنا. خيم الليل وكل شيء بدا عاديا، أو هكذا اعتقدت. في العبور اللاحق سيتغير المشهد. مطار أنطاكيا وحده كان كافياً لمعرفة ما حصل في سوريا خلال سنة ونصف من الرحلات إليها، وعبور الحدود أيضاً يؤكد ذلك. وكل المظاهر التي وضعتها في رأسي لاحقاً كمؤشر للتغيير السريع والعميق الحاصل. لكنني حينذاك وأنا أنزل من الهضبة ركضا مع ألم ساقي لم أفكر في كل ذلك. وصلت إلى أسفل الهضبة ثم ركعت على قدمي وبقيت لأكثر من 10 دقائق أتنفس بصوت مخنوق محاولة تهدئة ضربات قلبي. اعتقد الموجودون أنني منفعلة برؤية البلاد. في الواقع لم يكن المجال متاحا لذلك الترف، فقد ركضنا لفترة طويلة وصدري يوشك على الانسلاخ مني ولم أقدر على النهوض. أخيرا ركبنا السيارة وتنفست قليلا. هناك شاب يقود، نحن في الخلف ثلاثة، في الأمام 2، ميسرة ومحمد، سيتحولان فيما بعد إلى جزء من عالمي. هما مقاتلان مختلفان ومن عائلة واحدة، وهي العائلة التي سأمكث في كنفها. محمد وهو في 20 من عمره سيصير صديقي الدائم ويشاركني العمل مع النساء. كنا في ريف إدلب الذي لم يتحرر بشكل كامل من سيطرة قوات الأسد. هناك حواجز كثيرة تعترضنا وهي تابعة لكتائب الجيش الحر. نجتاز حقول الزيتون ونركض ندخل بوابة أرض العدم الأولى.
We can give her an applause, yeah? So that's very exciting, Samar. And yeah. It makes curious about what your book will be like. So
it's published also.
We will see, we'll see. Mm. I will ask you questions in English and you will reply in Arabic. And I will then
I prefer in Arabic.
Yeah. And then I will try and translate it to the audience. So my first question is, how was it to be back? What did you feel?
When I came back?
Into Syria.
أنت بتعرف لما بدأ الشمال السوري يتحرر، في كتير من الناس قررت العودة لسوريا. يعني مش صحيح إنه النشطاء السوريين كانوا مؤمنين بحق السوريين بالعدالة والحرية والديمقراطية اتخلوا عن بلدهم.
When the north of Syria got liberated, many of the Syrians, they went back to Syria because they thought that Syria would be democratic and liberated.
And the activities they want to...
And they want to have their activities on the ground and not in exile or in Europe.
كان الشمال السوري لم يتحرر بالكامل. أنا قررت، كنت في باريس واضطررت الخروج وقررت إنه أنا بدي أرجع لبلدي. مش كانت الخطة إنه أرجع أطلع. يعني إحنا كنا مفكرين إنه تحررت الأرض، بس كان الأسد عم بيقصف الناس المدنيين خلال الطائرات، ونحن فكرنا إنه نرجع نبني البلد.
It was her idea when she got back to Syria to rebuild the country. And in this, the same moment, Assad was still bombing the north of Syria.
فهو كان نوع من، يعني ما فيني أعمل إنه كان هول الموضوع، إنه أو عمله موضوع إنه كان كتير عظيم إنه نرجع. كان الطبيعي إنه نرجع لبلدنا.
We thought it was natural to return to our homeland, to our country, not to stay in exile.
يعني لأنه السوريين لما خرجوا ضد نظام الأسد، ضد نظام دكتاتوري ومجرم، خرجوا من أجل بلدهم، من أجل حريتهم. لذلك كان طبيعي أنا وغيري كتير أن نرجع.
When me and all the other demonstrators took to the streets to demonstrate against this criminal dictatorial regime, we did it to improve our country. So when we left, it was our ultimate goal to return and do the same thing.
يعني باختصار كانت مثابة العودة إلى البيت. فينك تحس، تعرف شو يعني الواحد يرجع لبيته.
It was something like returning home. Was your perspective different when you got there as a journalist living in France, when you were still living in Syria as a civilian? Did you look differently to the country?
يعني هذا السؤال ما بعرف كيف بدي جاوبك عليه، خاصة إنه أنا حاسة إنك ما عم تنقل كل مشاعري بالترجمة.
طيب في في لا is there a difference? Did you feel different?
مش different, ما في شيء, لأنه أنا كنت لما فوت على البلد وضل فترة وبعدين أرجع أطلع كنت أعمل نفس الشيء, محاضرات في الخارج, لأنه النظام الأسد كان عم بيكذب على العالم وكان عم بيقول إنه عم بيقاتل الجهاديين, وفي بداية كانت الثورة وكان ما في جهاديين, فما كان عندي إحساس بالغرابة بالبداية. يعني حتى بدأت تتدفق هاي المجموعات الجهادية لاحقا, يعني كان أمر طبيعي, كان يشبه حالي, يعني بيشبه التنفس, بيشبه الطعام, بيشبه كل شيء, ما كان في أحاسيس مختلفة. ما بحب كتير قصص البطولة, هي كانت شيء طبيعي.
For me it wasn't different at all. Still there weren't a lot of jihadis or jihadist people around, and it was like breathing the air, eating the food like I have always done before.
إضافة إنه الناس كانت عم بتقاوم على الأرض, يعني كان في مقاومة حقيقية, مقاومة مدنية, وكان الجيش الحر يدم قوى مدنية أيضا. يعني فعلا كانت الثورة, كان عنا أمل إنه الثورة ستنجح.
It was still only civil resistance or resistance from the Free Syrian Army, and we had the idea that this revolution would succeed.
وكان عندي مشروع لبناء مؤسسة مجتمع مدني تعنى بالتعليم والتمكين السياسي والديمقراطي بالشمال.
It was our goal to build a civil society with education, culture, and other things. In my opinion, yeah, from the beginning,
it was before 3 years ago.
Yeah, of course. In the beginning, I always felt that the Syrian revolution was a revolution of the people, not really of the intellectuals or the writers or the artists. Do you think that the intellectuals have done enough, or have they done too little?
يعني في مثقفين وفي نخب ثقافية وحتى اقتصادية إلى حد, يعني في كانوا مع الثورة, ولكن أنا باعتقادي إنه ما كان كافي, أو ما كان كافي لرفض أو لموازاة الحراك الشعبي الثوري الهائل والبطولي اللي قام فيه الشعب السوري. يعني نحن أنا بشوف إنه لم النخبة الثقافية والسياسية لم تكن على مستوى التضحيات الكبيرة التي قام بها الشعب السوري, وهي واحدة من مشاكل حقيقية.
There was some kind of an intellectual and political elite that stood up and spoke against the regime, but if you compare it to what the people did and the sacrifices the people have made for this revolution, these activities of the elite, of the cultural elite, was too little. هلا في المستقبل.
It's enough.
It's enough. Last question. Last question.
No, because
it's okay. It's the last question. Your last book was not really a novel, but it was more an.
No, it's not a novel. It's.
It was a personal
relative
account.
It's relative.
Yeah. But in the past you've written a lot of novels, and now it's something different. But in the future, will you go on and write novels again, or will you stay on this path?
No, actually, I'm writing now a new novel.
I don't have to translate this. Thanks to Samar Yazbek.
Thank you. I have to come back.
No, if you want.
Come back. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So now we will meet Faraj Barakdar. If he could come forward. Aina Faraj. Faraj Barakdar is a poet and a journalist, and he has been arrested. He has been arrested. Tafadhal.
I'm alone, or someone will come.
He has been arrested for 15 years in prison, and in 2000, 1 year short of his release, he was given amnesty by the president, Bashar al-Assad, thanks to huge international pressure, also from PEN. And we have found his longtime friend, Ronald Bos, willing to ask him some questions. But first, we will see a short video. No, we're not? Okay. Okay, so I will give the microphone to Honorable Boss. He already has one. Go ahead.
Well, good evening. I want to go back a little bit in time. I want to go back to 9/11/1989. It's a bit curious date. It was before 9/11, we know all very much. I was on a holiday in France, and I read in the newspaper Le Monde that very day about a poet in prison in Syria, and his name was Faraj Bayraktar. He was in prison for 15 years, and I was really very much astonished about why should a poet be in prison. I have never been in the Middle East before, and I didn't know so much about Syria. And then I started to research a little bit, and I found out through Amnesty that he was still in prison. First years he was in prison, as it was called, incomunicado. And I decided to do something about this. I wanted to make a documentary about him, or about him, about his family, about what was what were the circumstances why he was in prison. So I want to cut the story very short because it was in the time before everything happened because of the 9/11 of 2000, and in Syria was only Hafez, what's his name, al-Assad, huh? Like that.
Al-Assad?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was the old dictator.
Hafez al-Assad, the Hafez, father of this dictator.
My Arab is terrible. I don't speak any words with. And suddenly, during this period, the father died, and the son, a dentist in London, I think he was. He
inherited the republic.
The republic, yes. And what happened? In the mood of transition, he decided to free a lot of political prisoners, among them Faraj Bayraktar. So, after how long was it that you were liberated?
At the end of 2000.
After how many years?
After about 14 years.
So,
I didn't finish the 15. Just
no.
14.
Just 14. Only 14 years. Okay. So I visited him then, and I made some images, and that's what Martin was talking about. And we will show you now about 5 minutes of this footage. It's just footage. It has never become a documentary. And it is not subtitled, so Martin will spontaneously translate what Faraj is telling. Okay, can you start the... of 2000, something like that.
Yeah.
The last image was with your brother. He joined you in the prison, and you were both three then. How about your brother now?
We were three brothers in prison, unfortunately. One was accused as a member in Islamic Brotherhood, and I am as a communist, and the third one, whom you saw, was not Islamic Brotherhood and not communist. So, but he was arrested for 9 years. Now he is still in Syria. He refused to escape. He tried to make his resistance with his loot, as you So, but he told me that it is his destiny, like the most of our people, he obliged to move or to skate from place to avoid bombing or shelling. But always he said, don't worry. The barrels or rockets, if it comes to my room, so say, God bless him. If it comes to our neighbor, I will say the same. But his spirit is good until now.
Yes, we are friends on Facebook, and every now and then we exchange a little, very small messages, but Ibrahim is always very optimistic.
Yes, optimistic and very brave, really. And I know that he is threatened by the regime and by ISIS also, because ISIS consider him atheist and the regime, because he is a democratic one or secular one or oppositor one. So his situation really from the two sides, but he keep in the village, and the village, some the youngs of the village could until now could protect the village. But my brother couldn't move at all to home, for example, or to anyway, because the fences around the village, any fence will arrest him. But he said, I will not move. I'm in the village.
You were arrested, as I found out later, not because you were a poet, and not because you were writing poems about the regime or against it, but you were arrested because you were one of the most, what was it, the president of the Communist Party of, what was it, of Action, that was the name.
Yes.
What are you doing now? You're living in Stockholm since some years?
Yes.
What can you do now?
But first, I must correct something.
Ah.
I was arrested 3 times in my life. The first time was because of the literary magazine, and especially for one poem. The second time I was arrested, they accused me as oppositor in some party, but really I wasn't. The third and longest time, yes, I was communist, and it was the longest period, 14 years. But later, when I was released, I came first to Germany. I was invited by Heinrich Böll for 8 months and went back to Syria. Then I was invited to Netherlands and taught in Leiden University, the Arabic faculty, 1 year, and went back to Syria. Then I was invited to Sweden 10 years ago. Then I decided to stay, not to go back to Syria, because some things happened and my friends were arrested. So I decided to stay, and until now, my life in Sweden, I think maybe the real life I lived in my life, maybe 15 years, 10 of them in Sweden, 1 of them in the Netherlands, and about 1 in Germany. To me, I couldn't say that I suffer anything, because our people, you know, they are not safe about their life. They couldn't manage for their food. So I feel that I am in paradise. Just I have to do my best if I can help. When I couldn't, really, I feel that I am very stressed. But when I feel that, yes, I could do something, I feel comfortable. This is my life now in Sweden.
Mm-hmm. And in what way affects the situation in Syria, your work as a poet?
At the beginning, when the revolution started, really the main rule was how to move the documents, for example, photos for massacres, for bombing, for later the videos, how to sent them to some Arabic media or European media, and it was at that time difficult. But later, and nowadays, a lot of the youngs, they know well how to use their mobile, the camera, and to connect direct, live, with some TVs. So now, or 3 years ago and now, until now, they don't need our help in this way. They need another help. But at the beginning, at that time, it was like that. Or to speak, to say something, to arrive the truth, because the regime really lying all the time. And some governments in the world try to say, yes, he is secular. But I know that he's secular because he arrested me for my opinion 14 years, and he arrested thousands of people. He arrested the Islam Brotherhood, the communist, the secular. How he can be secular? And how the secular can be friend with the secular Islamic, Iranian Islamic Republic? It is secular. Hezbollah, the Shia, Hezbollah. Is it secular? Kataib al-Fadl Abbas, Asab al-Ahlaq, Shia from Iraq, are they secular? But in Europe, some governments, not the people, not the civil foundations or organizations, no, the policy of the most of the governments try to confuse the audience. I know that the TVs or the media, they don't tell the truth, even not one of 100% of the truth. For that, I think the writers, the journalists, Syrian journalists, they must tell the truth, and it is really very difficult because the media closed. Yes, there's freedom of speech in Europe, but it is, they could say, you say what we want, but also we can not publish it or.
But Faraj, my question was, does it affect your work as a poet?
Of course, before the revolution, when I moved from the desert in Syria, because the regime make everything desert. The nature, the policy, the education, the morals, everything is desert. And I moved to Europe, where forests, where rivers, lakes, everything clean, people are comfortable. Just to move from this place to this place, you will be affected in your writing, in your feeling, in your system, in your life. So I knew that my life, after I came to Europe, it is another life. And even my vocabulary, my dictionary when I write, it is another vocabulary. Because I can write now about some birds. In Syria, the birds escaped. I can write about the nature. In Syria, there is no nature, or very bad nature. I can speak about love, because I see in the streets people who love each other. In Syria, it's forbidden. So really, everything you can say that it is paradox. Mm-hmm. Like I wrote one book about my journey to Netherlands. As if I moved from fire hell to paradise. Mm. Okay. So when I see trees, I remember that in Syria, there were some trees, but they cut it. So the situation like that. Mm-hmm. So I think my writings or my poetry has some new feelings, new words, new ideas. Mm-hmm. But I think it is normal.
I've read not long ago a poem of yours in the book Syria Speaks.
Yes.
Do you want to read that poem?
Yes. Do you have it in English?
I have it in English.
Okay. نعم هي قصيدة تشريقة بس إلى عنوان فرع بالإنجليزي صلاة إلى حمص سآتي إلى حمص بعد قليل سأدخلها آمنا بحماية أبنائها ويقيني بهم وقرابة 20 عاما من الغيب والهينمات الضريرة 20 عاما تنكر لي في مفارقها حرس دججوني بأسلحة لا أراها ومروا علي بأسلحة لا أراها ولكنني سوف آتي إليها على أي نحو تشاء. أليس لهذه المدينة أن تشتريني ولو بقليل من الورث والآس والمرحبات؟ سآتي إليها ولو لاجئا. إذ تغير معنى اللجوء وغادر قاموسه اللغوي القديم، فكيف أهندس قاموس حمصة وليس لي مثلي إمام ولا صلوات تبدد شكي، وليس له غير رب يرتل آياته في سريرته ريثما ينجلي فجرها عن معالمها ليقول لنا آمن كل من قال أو لم يقل تؤمنون ولا تؤمنون؟ فكل الذين أضاءوا مواعيدها بشموع أصابعهم كي ترى غدها أهلنا. وحمص كما أمها سوريا فوق كل الظنون، سآتي إلى حمص وحدي، سآتي إلى حمص ألفا، سآتي إليها حنانا وزلفا. فحمص التي عمدتني وحمص التي أسلمتني، يليق بها أن أكون لها ألف حب وحزن ونهر من الذكريات لتشفى وأشفى.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this was the first part of our evening. We will now have a short break of 15 minutes. And someone told me that there is a book table in front of the room. So please go and take a look. And we'll get back to you in 15 minutes. Thank you.